You're listening to Red Eye on Vancouver Cooperative Radio, CFRO 102.7 FM.
Before it was finally capped in July, the BP oil spill in the Gulf of Mexico dumped 4.4 million barrels of oil into the ocean. It may be surprising then that the Obama administration announced earlier this week that it is ending the moratorium on new deepwater drilling operations. The announcement means that new drilling could take place soon. But locals in some communities around the Gulf will not be surprised by this decision. They are accustomed to seeing the big oil companies get their way. For some, this most recent disaster is only one in a long line of abuses that have threatened to destroy not only their livelihood, but their communities as well. Jordan Flaherty is a journalist and community activist based in New Orleans. He is also the author of the book Floodlines, Community and Resistance from Katrina to the Jenna 6. And he joins us by phone from San Francisco. Good morning, Jordan.
Good morning, Sean. Thanks so much for having me on.
Well, thanks for joining us. Let's just focus for a moment on this most recent spill, the BP spill. How are people down there coping with this disaster?
Well, for people on the southern coast, south of New Orleans, it's been apocalyptic. You're talking about communities where people have been making a living off of fishing and off of the Gulf since before they were part of the United States for hundreds of years. And to have the Gulf put in danger, to have that way of making a living put at risk has been completely devastating for those communities. I think we're just seeing the beginning of how that's going to be affecting people. I think the long-term depression and dislocation and displacement is going to be really frightening. You know, they recently had a visit from a delegation of Native American communities from Alaska who've been talking about 21 years now after the Valdez spill. People are just beginning to be able to fish again. So, you know, these communities wonder how long it'll be before really the seafood of the Gulf will be safe. And again, it's not just people's livelihood. It's part of their culture as well.
Can you talk a little about those communities? There's some unique cultures and ecosystems along coastal Louisiana, I understand. Can you give us some idea of the kind of culture or cultures that continue to exist down there and are in danger of disappearing?
Absolutely. There's these white Cajun cultures, many of whom until very recently were French-speaking. There's Native American communities and African-American communities and Vietnamese communities. And all of them have in common that they were living very culturally separate from the rest of the United States. And in fact, for some of these communities, some of these African-American communities and Native American communities, this separate life was really a form of resistance to a dominant white supremacist culture that they were, you know, living outside of the rest of the culture of the state and the country. I was recently in Pointe-aux-Chien, Louisiana, a Native American community down near the coast, and you walk down the main street of that town, and the street stops at the water, and then you see telephone poles coming out of the water where the street used to continue, and now it's gone. I talked to one person, and she talked about how in her backyard she used to see land as far as the eye could see. They used to hunt in her backyard and grow vegetables in her garden, and now there's water almost literally lapping up on her back porch. So you have just within a few decades, the land has disappeared literally out from under the feet from communities. So even before this BP drilling disaster, you had decades of the land being stolen from people. In the early part of the 20th century, the oil companies went and really without the consent or knowledge of these communities, bought the land out from under their feet in land auctions in New Orleans. And over the subsequent decades, they dug 10,000 miles of canals through these communities that have caused these salt water to come into the freshwater marshes and cause massive coastal erosion. We lose about a football field of land every 45 minutes off of the southern coast of Louisiana. So, you know, literally the land is just being taken out from under people's feet.
And most of these people make their livelihood through fishing, is that right?
Absolutely. In every family, at least some family members will be making their living from that fishing. There's almost no family that's not affected, and those few families that are family members that aren't making their money from fishing or making their money from the oil companies. So you see people, they certainly don't trust the government or the oil companies in this situation, but they feel the oil companies, unfortunately, are their only hope for an economic livelihood, even though they know that the oil company at the same time has taken away much of their economic livelihood and much of their community and, again, their land.
Well, you've mentioned the relations between the people and the oil companies. What kind of legal avenues do people have to fight against some of the damage that's being done down there to them by these companies?
Well, I mean, I think we'll see that fought out off over the next years, you know, many years in the courts, you know, and I'm not a legal expert, so I can't say, but I can say that already many of the folks on the coast, and especially we've been hearing this from Native American communities and African American communities and Vietnamese communities, that folks have really had trouble getting the payments that BP promised. They do these applications for these payments they're supposed to get to pay them back the livelihood that they've lost for the fishing being taken away by this drilling disaster, and they hear back that they don't have the proper documentation to receive those payments. That's what people have been saying over and over and over again. So already, it definitely does not look good.
Well, let's speak about those payments for a second. We've got a lot of I've seen a lot of BP advertising on commercials on the television. They're this obviously spending a lot of money on their advertising campaign. Are they spending any money to actually help people get back on their feet down there in Louisiana?
Well, certainly, you know, some people have gotten payments, and oftentimes it's a bulk payment of $5,000 or even more, and some businesses have gotten more. But one of the questions is, you know, if you're making your living from fishing down on the Gulf, you know, even if you get, say, $5,000 to make up for, 6 months of fishing that you haven't been able to do, what's going to be the long-term solution if someone can't fish for 2 years or 5 years or 10 years or more? How do you make that up to someone? I mean, you can't just pay someone to sit there and not fish. You know, that's as devastating for a community as anything. You know, if these communities, it's, you know, in many cases been their cultural identity to live off the land on the southern coast. And part of what we're seeing is really taking that away from people. And, you know, again, it's not just with this drilling disaster. It's a long-term thing, and it's even not just the coastal communities. You have many other communities in the southern part of the state who have been displaced because of chemical processing plants and oil processing plants. These have been mostly African-American communities, these towns of Diamond and Reveal Town and several others. Mossville is another one, that were African-American communities that were polluted by a nearby chemical plant that set up near them. And then, communities sued in the aftermath of this pollution, and the result of the lawsuit is basically they were paid to move away. And so these communities that had been set up and unincorporated, oftentimes they're African-American communities set up in the 1700s, they were forced to move and again lose this relationship and culture that they'd had and community that they'd built over hundreds of years. And now if people want to go back and visit their former town or visit the graveyard, for example, of their loved ones, all that's left of the town is the graveyard, and they have to go through plant security of this chemical company to go to visit the graveyard.
It doesn't sound like the people down there are getting a lot of help from the government either.
You know, I think that's the real answer to all this. You know, we really need to fundamentally change the relationship our country and our politicians have with oil companies. For too long, we've completely handed the keys to the Gulf Coast to these oil companies. And really, you know, we're talking about 40% of the oil and natural gas of the United States that comes through U.S. economy has been really built on the bodies and on the land and on the health of these people from working class and poor Gulf Coast communities. And I think we really need to face up to that. And I think these communities need support. And I think we really need to challenge how we've let these oil companies do whatever they want to do.
And what do people really need down there in order to survive and thrive in along the Gulf Coast?
You know, honestly, I think what we really need is a new deal. You know, we need some real investment in these communities, just like working class communities need all around the country. And, you know, that's part of why we've been traveling with this project. It's called the Community and Resistance Tour, and why I came out with the book is to really talk about how this is something communities are facing all around the country. Disasters and displacement, and you know, whether it's the housing crisis, the foreclosure crisis, or whether it's, you know, more obvious disasters like Hurricane Katrina or the drilling disaster, it's working people and poor people that have been on the receiving end of this. And I think we really need to learn the lessons, not just from what's gone wrong, but from the way communities have resisted and the way communities have organized and fought against this. And especially in the aftermath of Hurricane Katrina, we had really inspiring organizing that's happened by people at the grassroots and the way people have fought back against displacement and dislocation.
Well, thanks so much for joining us today, Jordan, and bringing a lot of this information to our attention, because as after the hole was plugged, there's been less attention focused on this issue.
Well, thank you so much, and thanks for your great work. And, you know, we're really excited to be bringing the tour through Vancouver next Thursday and to connect with folks there.
Yeah, and I will mention that tour in a second. Thanks again.
Great, thank you again.
Jordan Flaherty is a journalist and community activist. He's also the author of the book Floodlines, Community and Resistance from Katrina to the Jenna 6. And as Jordan mentioned, he will be speaking in Vancouver at the Rhizome Cafe on Thursday, October 21st, 7 p.m., that's next Thursday, at 7 p.m. at Rhizome. And he'll be speaking as part of the Community and Resistance Tour about current social justice struggles from post-Katrina community organizing and cultural resistance on the Gulf Coast to queer activism and organizing against sexual violence. Again, that's at the Rhizome Cafe this coming Thursday at 7 p.m.